Welcome to the latest episode of the Generation Rent podcast. I'm Dan Wilson-Craw. I'm the Deputy Director of Generation Rent. And I'm joined by John Luke Bolton, who works for Safer Renting. And we're going to talk about illegal evictions, what makes evictions illegal, and what we can do about them. Welcome, John Luke.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Illegal evictions is one of these things that occasionally will come up in the news where someone's facing eviction, their landlord has just shown up and is taking their belongings out of the home, or they've changed the locks. Maybe the police get involved and say, we can't do anything about this. That's sort of, you know, when it hits the headlines. But we're really keen to understand sort of what lies behind these incidents. Are the police in the wrong here? What can be done about it? So could you tell us a bit about what Safer Renting does, what its role is in relation to illegal evictions?
Yeah, so Safer Renting, we're a charity. We assist tenants who've got problems with their landlord, and illegal eviction and harassment is a big part of what we do, the biggest part of what we do. So an illegal eviction, bluntly put, is an eviction that occurs without a court order. So if you're a tenant, which most renters are, the only way you can be evicted is if the landlord serves proper notice. After that notice is served and expired, goes to court, gets a court order, and then the eviction is carried out by a court-ordered bailiff. Any other form of eviction on a tenant would be an illegal eviction. If the landlord's gone around there, changed the locks, moving the things out, that would be an illegal eviction. So what we do, we take referrals from councils of tenants who gone to the council complaining of issues with their landlord, and we'll take on that case, contact the tenant, and then we'll assist in whatever way we can. So that can be negotiating with the landlord to prevent the eviction, taking legal action against the landlord. So there's various things you can do to protect a tenant. We assist tenants with injunctions. So that's a court order preventing the landlord from coming to the property. We can also assist with civil redress. So that would be stuff like a rent repayment order. A tenant can, if they've been illegally evicted, they can apply for up to 12 months worth of rent to be repaid. So that's a big part of what we do. So yeah, our whole purpose is to protect tenants from criminal landlords. And yeah, there's a lot of difficulties that come with that as well. The system isn't made, we don't think, to protect tenants. So it's not an easy job.
What sort of problems do you encounter when trying to enforce the law or get redress for tenants?
All sorts. I think the most common complaint we get, or we have, is against the police, because obviously the police are the number one sort of enforcement arm. They're the only organisation or institution that have the power to actually prevent an eviction when it's occurring. Obviously, they're the only organisation that can use force. So it would be quite easy to resolve most of these situations if the police knew what they were doing. All that would need to be done is the tenant contacts the police and reports the landlord, says the landlord's at the property trying to illegally evict them. It is a criminal offence, so the police do have the power to arrest the landlord or just to send them away, resolve the situation. But that barely ever happens. When the tenant calls the police, I think what happens is the police have an idea, it seems to me anyway, that because the landlord often is the owner of the property, there's this idea of property rights and it's the landlord's property. So you get the police turning up, they find out it's the landlord's property, and that immediately diminishes their view of the tenant. We often see police assisting with illegal evictions. I had a case the other day where a tenant was in the property. The landlord came around, started moving the tenant's things out of the property. taking some of the tenant's things as well. The tenant's now lost his passport and some of his valuables. The police came to the scene. They were actually looking at the landlord. This is what the tenant tells me, looking at the landlord, like moving the tenant's things. The tenant was saying, these are my things. Can you stop them moving them? And the police basically told the tenant to shut up and he was illegally evicted. And that's quite shocking, but it happens all the time. So that's our biggest complaint.
So the police are literally breaking the law in, you know, helping the landlords commit a criminal offence.
Yeah.
Is there anything a tenant can do in that sort of situation, you know, in terms of like complaining to the police? Or
one strategy we've come up with is when the landlord's threatening to illegally evict. So when you're aware, sometimes you're not aware of it, but when you've got an idea that they might go forward with an illegal eviction, they've said we're coming around on this date, something like that, calling 101 beforehand and reporting the threatened crime on 101, that can be quite helpful, because then that can give you a chance to flag it on their system and you can speak through to the advisor on the call and say to them, explain to them the law, explain to them that this is a criminal offence. And then they've got that flagged on their system. So when the police are called out, they'll be able to see the details of the report. And that does sometimes help. So that can be an assistance, but when you can't flag it, it is more difficult to deal with.
If it just happens out of the blue, you mean?
Yeah, if it just happens out of the blue.
It'd be good to know what the law is, that so tenants can sort of have it in their mind. It's a specific law, isn't it?
The relevant piece of legislation is the Protection from Eviction Act. And that protects all residential occupiers from eviction without a court order. So there's two parts of it that are relevant to this discussion. I can't remember the subsections off the top of my head, but
it's okay.
One is a protection against depriving the occupier of parts of the premises. So that's to do with changing the locks or removing the tenant's things. So the tenant is protected by the Protection from Eviction Act from illegal eviction by that subsection. The other one is relevant to this discussion is protection from harassment, which is also included in that in the Protection from Eviction Act. So that can be when the landlord does things to interfere with the peace and comfort of the residential occupier. So that can be stuff like depriving them of utilities,
cutting off the electricity and
that kind of thing. So those kind of things, anything done to interfere with the peace and comfort of the residential occupier or depriving them of their premises, that's a criminal offence under the Protection from Eviction Act.
Sometimes we'll hear from tenants whose landlord kind of texts them every day saying, when are you going to get out? Would that sort of fall under that as well, do you think?
Potentially, because there's a section in it that's when these acts are done with the intent to get them to leave the property. I suppose it's a bit unclear whether texting would be sufficient to interfere with the peace and comfort. If the tenant is concerned that they may go through with these threats, it would definitely be worth reporting to the council and seeking advice about. So I suppose it's still dependent on the situation, surrounding circumstances and stuff like that. But if there is concern, definitely would advise to seek assistance.
Yeah. And I know that Safe Renting has done some work to understand sort of the extent, the scale of the problem. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so we basically before this report, there's really no national figures on illegal evictions and harassment. The only sort of figures we had were the HClick data. So that's the figures that the homelessness teams and councils report. for people, homeless people that say that they're homeless and the reason for the homelessness is being illegally evicted. But the issue with those figures is a lot of homelessness officers aren't trained in tenancy law, so they wouldn't be able to identify illegal eviction. And often we found that they're not properly recorded. For example, we've compared our figures for illegal evictions to the local authorities' recorded figures on HClick that we work with, and we've got more recorded than them, which is wrong because obviously they're bigger organisations and we don't get all of their referrals. So we knew that these HClick figures were massive undercounts to start with, and that was a big concern because if you're not counting the figures, you're not going to see how big a problem it is and you're not going to deal with the issue. So that was sort of the incentive to come up with the illegal eviction count. So what we've basically done is we've contacted all the agencies, national agencies that might record figures on illegal eviction, and we've collated all of their data. So that's Shelter, Citizens Advice, the Legal Aid Agency, our data, and the HClick figures. So we've got the figures for 2020 and 2021. In 2021, we found from those figures that there were 7,778 cases of illegal eviction or harassment reported to one of these agencies involved in the count.
Was over 2 years, was it?
No, that was one. That was 1 year.
That was single year.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember the 2020 off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So, 2021, it was 7,778.
Yeah, we've been looking at the homelessness figures, HClick figures, and there were just over 1,000 in the space of a year just before the pandemic. So yeah, we're looking at more than seven times the number that councils are recording.
Yeah, I mean we're still concerned that's an undercount, because not everyone's going to go to Citizens Advice and Shelter and stuff. They've got limited capacity in the first place. So we sometimes refer tenants to those organisations and they're not able to get through. Often some people, certain demographics as well, are less likely to report these sort of issues. So we're still concerned that it's an undercount, but at least it's a start and we something to work with, and it's a figure. So we've got the figures for 2021 illegal eviction and harassment. So the figures for 2020, there were 6,930 illegal evictions. The number of landlords prosecuted for illegal eviction in the same year was 12. So it's a tiny amount of landlords prosecuted.
Less than 1%.
Yeah,
that's crazy. It's incredible. And I know that there's some councils and police forces are take it more seriously than others. I know that. I mean, we're in touch with Sheffield Council, who have their heads screwed on in terms of illegal evictions. And I mean, presumably they account for a lot of them, along with obviously London cases as well.
Yeah, I think we found that there were 50% of the prosecutions, which is still only six, were done in two police force areas, the Met and South Yorkshire. It's talking about South Yorkshire. I know that the TRO up there, Dave Hinkling, is really good, and he is successful with prosecutions. Like I say, I think over the years he's responsible for a lot of them, but it proves it is doable. It can be done. It's just a lot of councils don't do it.
So I guess that brings us on to the next question I have is, which is, we talked about the police not understanding just kind of making assumptions about what the law actually is around what a landlord can do with their property. But what are the other challenges that you and other enforcement bodies face in terms of preventing and then enforcing preventing illegal evictions and enforcing the law around?
I think one of the big issues we find is that you've got sort of two types of renting out a property. You can have the conventional setup, which is what most people think of a landlord as, if it's the property owner who's renting out their property. Now, in that scenario, there's less issues. There's still many issues, but there's less issues because you can find out the identity of the landlord by doing a land registry check. You can find out the identity by doing a council tax check. So if you ever need to take legal action, you've got that. You can find their address, you can find their name, contact details, all the stuff you need to take legal action. And then that allows routes for either preventing the illegal eviction through an injunction or through taking action for civil redress via, like I said earlier, rent repayment orders. But one of the big things we deal with at Safer Renting is rent-to-rent scamming, which is where the landlord isn't the property owner. So there's either what's called a mean tenant, which is someone that the property was let to by a landlord, and then that person has sublet the property, or you have property management companies who take on a contract to rent out the property. And this sort of results in all sorts of criminality. Often you'll find with these situations, the property will be overcrowded. There'll be, so that, the for example, to maximize the profit, the companies will subdivide the property up. They're paying a guaranteed rent to the landlord, and then they'll subdivide it up, overcrowd it, so they're maximizing their rental income. So there's all sorts of issues as well as the illegal evictions with these companies. But
because they'll need a license, for example, if they're relying to a lot of people.
They should, if they're renting out to five or more people made up of two or more households, the property is required to have a license. But often in these situations they don't. But what's difficult about enforcing illegal evictions against these types of setups is you don't have the same things as I was mentioning earlier. You can't do the land reg check, the council tax checks, because they're not linked to these properties. So you can't find out the identity of who these people are. So when you try and take legal action, you don't have an address to send you don't have an address to send the documents to. You don't know who's behind it. If you do manage to figure things out through sort of a long, intense investigation, they've got limited liability. So they'll just dissolve the company and set up a new one. I think it's £12 to set up a new company on a company's house. So there's no incentive to prevent these people from doing it because they've set it up in such a way that it's really hard to find out who they are. If you do manage to find out who they are and do take effective action, there's nothing that can be done to go against the company director anyway who's responsible. He'll dissolve the company and set up a new one because they're not legitimate companies in the first place. So there's you find these people that have got thousands of different companies registered on Companies House. So that's another really difficult thing to deal with that we often run into.
And when if you manage to do get prosecution together and it goes through court, does the landlord, the offender then, see justice, or are there still issues, even though if you jump through all the right hoops?
Yeah, when the council, what we do is mostly civil. So that will be civil redress. So we'll be assisting the tenant directly in their claim against the landlord.
To claim back rents.
To claim back rent, stuff like that. So they'll see the money back to them. When the council try and take enforcement action, that will be a criminal prosecution. Won't get the tenant any recompense, but it's still important as it's prosecuting a landlord and deterring other landlords from from doing the same. So a council prosecution is a very long process. They need to prove to a high criminal, a high evidential standard, what's happened. Often it's hard to do that with illegal evictions, because, you know, an illegal eviction can take place between two parties. It's one person's evidence against the other, one person's statement against the other. So it can be a very long, intense process, and a lot of evidence is needed to be gathered. The council officer would then need to go to the legal team to get legal's opinion. There's a lot of back and forth between legal and the council officer. Sometimes legal will be the barrier and they'll say there's not enough evidence here. So the officer might have done, say, 30 hours of work. The legal team said, we don't have enough here. We're not going to do it. So that makes it hard for the tenancy relations officer. Sometimes you'll get it where legal say, yeah, we can take this case forward. They take it to court. We've had this before where the council have taken it, the case to court. This is after, say, hundreds of hours of work, thousands of pounds spent by the council. And we've had it before where the landlord hasn't turned up to court and the court have issued an arrest warrant for the landlord. The police have said, this isn't high up on our list of priorities. We're not going to go out and arrest the landlord. And nothing's done. So after all of that money spent by the council, all of that time spent, all of those resources, the landlord gets away with it scot-free because the police don't see it as an issue.
Good grief.
Another thing we'll see is after, again, all of that hours spent, the penalties for the landlord, it might be, you know, £200 fine, something like that, something absolutely ridiculous. You've ruined someone's life. You've thrown out all of their possessions. You've made them homeless. £200 penalty. It's just absolutely absurd. But
and £200 is less than what it would cost the landlord to actually go through the legal route, right? You know, apply to court for a court order.
Yeah. So there's just why choose if you're a landlord, if you're what you're set with the opinion of giving notice and getting a solicitor to serve Section 21, paying the court fees, or you can illegally evict them and pay a penalty of £200. Pretty obvious choice.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, there's a huge array of changes that are needed. And obviously we've got, the government has come out with the Renting Reform White Paper back in June. Within that, it did refer to some things like landlords who are hiding behind like complicated company structures and things. I think that's in their sights. And it also referred to illegal evictions and the challenges with councils and the police working together. We didn't get much detail though. So, I mean, what do you think are the things we need to see from the government in terms of the law?
Yeah, so like you said earlier, with the white paper, there's a few things included that might be helpful, but they're quite light on detail. I think safe renting, we think that there's certain changes that, or plan changes that look like they'll benefit a certain group of tenants. So the stuff like abolishing Section 21, obviously that's a brilliant outcome, and it's gonna improve security for a lot of tenants, but it won't do much, we don't think, to protect tenants from criminal landlords, because obviously criminal landlords, they don't use Section 21s in the first place, and they use illegal means to get their property back. So what there really needs to be now is especially with that change as well, because obviously if you're making it harder for landlords to get their property back legally, then there is more of an incentive for landlords to use illegal eviction. So what needs to come with that change is really robust enforcement. And they have, I see in the white paper, included some things, like we say, quite light on detail, like there's the proposal for a new property portal, which is to do with improving data on landlords operating in their area, which could be really helpful, could not be helpful at all. It depends, I suppose, on how well it deals with the rent-to-rent scenarios that I mentioned earlier, whether it's going to be able to pick up on them. I don't know how it would do that, but maybe it could come up with something. As well, the, you know, how are they going to gather that data? I think, you know, that could be an issue. The other thing they're proposing are the membership of the ombudsman, which is mandatory. So that gives councils, I suppose, a way to take action against landlords that aren't a member of this ombudsman. So there's another way which things can be enforced against landlords that aren't compliant. The issue is with them bringing in these new requirements, are they going to give as well the resources to enforce these new requirements? So are they going to have a team dedicated to ensuring people are members of this ombudsman? Are they going to have a team dedicated, you know, are councils going to have staff to prosecute landlords that aren't members of this ombudsman? So we've got licensing already. Licensing can be helpful, but I think at the moment, the figures are there's about 2 enforcement officers for every 10,000 rented properties. So councils can't at the moment currently properly enforce licensing law. So how are they going to enforce all these other new things when there's a real lack of staff? So there's two problems, I think. One is the lack of staff. If they're bringing on new requirements, they need a lot more funding into actually enforcing things, because there's no point having new law protecting tenants if you're not going to enforce it. Like I said, there's already the Protection from Eviction Act, which we've seen less than 0.1% of landlords are being prosecuted for offences under that act. The other thing is, so you need proper funding for enforcement, and you need to reduce the burden on councils for taking enforcement action. So there needs to be a streamlined process in councils, so that enforcement officers, when they're taking prosecutions forward, they can do it easily. They can have good communications with the legal team, or they can have a legal team member of staff in their team, and they can work with them effectively, and they can take it on. And the evidential burden of the Protection from Eviction Act, that can be reduced. One of the suggestions in the white paper is the suggestion to do civil financial penalties rather than a criminal prosecution, which could be really helpful, because that's a lower evidential burden. The TROs could take that on themselves without having to find speak to the legal team. They can do that in a tribunal, and it's a lot less of a timely process. So if you take down the burdens on the councils and you improve their funding and their resources, then I think you could actually have a proper enforcement. But that's the thing at the moment. There's not enough people, and it's too hard for councils to actually take action. So it's still, you know, very much to be seen with the reform bill, whether it's going to deal with the issue or not.
Yeah. And what do you think could happen to improve the response of the police to illegal evictions? You know, could they, I mean, clearly they have an important role, but they're just, you know, it sounds like they're not taking it seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big question. It's a big difficult question. Potentially government guidance for the police. Nationwide training program, mandatory training program for the police on the fact that it's a criminal offence. But we've tried training with the police. Safer Renting have been trying to train the police for 2 years, the Met Police, and it hasn't worked. We've got a training program going on where all new officers are required to take our training program. It's only a quick 3-minute video, but it explains that it's a criminal offence. Doesn't seem to have worked. So whether a government training program would be more effective, I don't know. Another thing that's happening, not related to what the government's doing, but safer renting, like I said, tried to work with the police and it hasn't worked. So what we are proposing to do is to actually take a case against the police, a legal case against the police, because we see it all the time. And we're now in contact with a lawyer who specializes in this area, taking action against the police. And we're referring cases to him all the time. And we are intending to take legal action against the police, because something just needs to be done. It's just ridiculous at the moment.
Yeah. Do they need a duty on them? You know, a responsibility under the law to, you know, actually, you know, take evidence, pass it on to the likes of Safer Renting or councils?
Yeah, I mean, that would be amazing if that's something that could be done. I'm not quite sure how that would work. Whether there would be a specific duty on the police for illegal evictions, if that's something that would be workable, I'd be fully for it. Yeah, so
it's something we tried to get put into the policing bill last year, but it didn't. But yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, it could be an opportunity with the renters reform bill. The other thing, I mean, you're familiar with the rent repayment order system, where tenants can claim back rent from a landlord that's broken the law. Do you think that has a role to play in kind of making sure that when we've got this portal and the ombudsman, that landlords are registering and you know, clearly one of the problems is, you know, getting landlords that are trying to avoid the authorities to register. Do you think, you know, rather than, you know, given that councils and the authorities have little funding to do that, you know, how useful is having that ability for a tenant to basically take their landlord to tribunal?
Rent repayment orders are great, because obviously the legal process for tenants is so difficult in terms of what would normally be the case is they'd need to, you know, you'd need to find a solicitor. Most things aren't funded by legal aid, or if you're not eligible, you'd need to pay those costs. So you'd need to pay thousands of pounds to your solicitor and potentially risk losing it all if it's not successful. So that creates, most people just say, oh, I won't bother then. But with rent repayment orders, what they do is they can be done by agencies like Safer Renting, Justice for Tenants, Safer Renting, we do it for our clients for free. We don't take any payment. Justice for Tenants take a 30% cut, or the tenant, if they've got the time, they can have a look into it and they can do it themselves. And because it's a relatively straightforward thing to do. There's some sort of legal stuff you know be worth researching, but if you're competent, I think you could do it. And the other thing is, you're not at risk of costs. So there's a £300 in total court fees. Once you've paid that, there's no risk of the other side getting their costs against you. So there's minimal risk in it. And so it's a great sort of tool for tenants to take action. So if you'd be including it in the and I think there's currently 7 offences which you can take a rent repayment order for: non-licensing, illegal eviction, harassment, I think maybe trespass by the landlord, I can't remember. So if you're including that, not being a member of the portal as another offence that you can take action on behalf of, then yeah, that would be another way to ensure that landlords do sign up to these portals, and then that would incentivize more landlords to sign up. So yeah, I think that's a great suggestion.
Yeah, it's currently not in the white paper, but it's something we're, you know, we think could be quite potent in terms of driving up enforcement. So we're trying to convince the department to do that. There are a couple of, it's really interesting to hear about the potential legal action against the police, but I know that there are a couple of other court cases that are going on that could be quite important in making sure that the criminal landlords can be brought to justice.
Yeah, so the one case that we're taking on at the moment, the Rackerson versus Jepson case, is currently going to the Supreme Court, and it's to do with rent repayment orders. So we're involved in this case, and what it's to do with is basically, at the moment, a rent repayment order can only be done against your immediate landlord. So if it's a scenario like I was explaining earlier, the rent-to-rent scams, like I said, with that, it's impossible to enforce against a mean tenant or a property management company, because they can just dissolve and start again, or you don't have the identity for them, so they just run away. So the tenant is, and it's very unfair to tenants in those scenarios, because they suffer just the same issues, but they don't see the compensation for it. Because you can only go against the immediate landlord, so because you can only go against the property management company, you never see it. So what this Rackerson versus Jepson case is about is whether the tenant can go against a superior landlord, so whether they can go above their immediate landlord, above the property management company, and to the property owner. And if that is the case, then it will be a lot easier for the tenant to take action, because then they can say, well, the property owner is responsible, we've got their details, and we can go against them. So it's a big important case. It's really important as well, because maybe a property owner, they rented the property out to this property management company, and they've not been involved in the crime of, you know, maybe it's the property management company that's carried out the illegal eviction or subdivided the property up. It's often the case that they are actually involved and they know what's going on, but sometimes it might not be the case. But still, they should be responsible. It's their property. And if they're not held responsible for anything, then there's no incentive for them to do checks on who they're subletting their property to. They can just rent it out to whoever. As long as they're getting their guaranteed rent, they don't care. So it's an increasing issue. We see rent-to-rents increasing more and more. It's a more and more popular sort of business model. And you need to disincentivize property owners from sort of not caring what's going on in their property. You need to start creating that incentive for them to be responsible for who they're housing in their properties. Until there's that responsibility, they'll carry on as they are they're doing.
That's such a good point. And yeah, I suppose that's part of the reason why rent to rent is becoming popular. That's really great what you've taken us through, John Luke. Before we finish, I just want to, if people are interested to know, sort of if they feel like they might be at risk of an illegal eviction, what could they do? If it turns out they've got safer renting operating in their area or otherwise.
So yes, we take referrals from the council. So we don't take direct referrals. But what you can do if you're living in London and you believe you might be in one of our council areas, well, first you can go and check on our website. We should have the councils that we work for up there. There'll be useful things on there. We have blogs about tenants' rights. To various things that can improve your knowledge of what your rights are on our site, how to rent, alternative how to rent guides. And so if you are in our area, go to the council, explain to the council the issues you're facing, tell them that you want a referral to Safer Renting, and we may be able to help. If you're not in our in an area that we can assist with, I would also advise looking into tenants unions, so London Renters Union, ACORN, they'll be able to explain to you what your rights are, and also take other kinds of action that we, even at Safe Renting, we can't take, like they can do preventing evictions by getting the members out and preventing a landlord from carrying out a legal eviction. So they, joining a union is always a good idea. And I just, last bit of advice, if your landlord doesn't have a court order, then they can't evict you. So they need a court order. What they need to do is they need to serve you with a Section 21, gives you 2 months notice. You don't need to leave at the end of that notice if you don't want to. That just means that the landlord can then take you to court. And there's lots of things that can invalidate a Section 21. If they haven't protected your deposit, if you live in an unlicensed house, if they didn't serve you with a gas safety certificate, a whole host of other things. So the most common scenario I see is the Section 21 is invalid. So if you've been served a Section 21, check it, make sure it's valid. And like I say, if it's not valid, there's no requirement on you to leave. You can defend it in court. If it is valid, you still don't need to leave at the end of the 2 months, but you might want to think about it because the landlord can then take court action against you. But yeah, don't leave if you don't need to.
Great. Thanks very much for that. And the point earlier about phoning 101, if you're worried that your landlord might attempt to evict you.
Yes.
I mean, that sounds like it could be really helpful as well. So that's all we have time for. If you are interested in getting involved with Generation Rent's campaign to bring the Renters Reform Bill into law, abolish end unfair evictions, bring in a landlord registration system, and tighten up the law around illegal eviction and other areas, you can sign up on generationrent.org/end_unfair_evictions. Thank you to John Luke Bolton of Safer Renting. I'm Dan Wilson-Craw of Generation Rent, and see you next time.